If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, you big thinkers, you.
Well, Merry Christmas, Mike, Rob, and Josh. May your holiday be filled with all the peace, love, and warmth of the season. And maybe, just maybe, a little snow on Christmas morning.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. Now, here's Mike.
Man, am I excited about our guest today. We are really, really super psyched to have this gentleman on because I, especially during the holidays, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know why things pop up on my feed, but I would say probably at least once a day, I'm doing a deep dive and something pops up from the Tonight Show, the best Tonight Show, the one with Johnny Carson. And joining us today is Mark Malkoff. He is a comedian, a podcast host, and the man behind the Carson podcast. He's more of a fan than I could ever be, and possibly the world's biggest Johnny Carson fan. He's the author of a new book. It's called Love and Johnny Carson. Now, I don't know if that has a comma in it because I don't have the book in my hot little hand. Is it Love, Johnny Carson? Or is it One Obsessive Fan's Journey to Find the Genius Behind the Legend? This is a deeply researched, wildly entertaining look at the man who defined late-night television. 400 interviews? Wow. Can't wait to dive into this book. This is going to be my Christmas book. He sets the record straight on Carson's life, which I think has been interpreted so many different ways.
Yeah.
Legends, feuds, brilliance, you know, from Joan Rivers to Jay Leno to David Letterman and everything in between. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. And I am, it seems like the older I get, the more I just lock in on the fact that the gold standard of all talk shows, Johnny Carson. I've always thought that when it comes to interviewing, he is the best ever simply because he would let his guests run. He would take what he
That's
got,
right.
And if he got a lot, he'd let them go. And that's probably, for me, the greatest asset he had. But 400 interviews, yeah. You talk to everybody that's anybody about Johnny Carson. And, you know, let's just dive in and see where this goes, because
sure.
I love that show. I watch it constantly. Of your 400 interviews, I'll start out by saying, was there one absolutely incredible surprise that you got, that you said, I didn't see that coming, I didn't know anything about that? Dive in. I'd love to hear about it.
Sitting down with Mel Brooks in his office in Culver City, who was on Johnny's very first show, October 1st, 1962, Mel is doing routines that he did on Carson's show in the 60s, word for word. That is his memory recollect was incredible. And just to hear backstage at Johnny's first show, because Groucho Marx was the surprise guest that introduced Johnny. And Mel Brooks said, you know, I was like in my late 20s, I got Groucho's autograph, and just to have it from his perspective and making fun of Tony Bennett, who was also on the very first show. Mel got on Johnny's desk and was mocking Tony's singing, and Tony got a little bit upset, Mel said. But I thought that was pretty incredible to hear the story directly from him.
I think that when you right now, on my page, it's constantly Rodney and his
yes.
different appearances.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if
goodness.
You ever saw.
Yeah.
And this is I'm going to go in 50 different directions because
sure.
there's stream of consciousness here. When there is a clip I have never seen. I saw it this week of Rodney coming on the Tonight Show, and Rodney was not wearing the Rodney uniform. He didn't have the red tie. He didn't have the regular patter either. He had a like it appeared to be a brown suit
wow.
with an open shirt on. and he bombed. And I don't know whether it was Rodney trying to do a left turn and maybe modify from the prepared bit.
Was he promoting Ladybugs or Meet Wally Sparks or something?
I have no idea. Let's get into the process of the Tonight Show and how it evolved, started out in New York, moved out to L.A. I forgot that it was all the way back in the 60s. That would be in New York where the first one comes on. This was this pre-Ed McMahon when they did the first one?
The first Tonight Show, Ed was there.
The whole time. All right.
He was. They did a game show called Who Do You Trust on ABC. And Johnny, when he got the gig, wanted all new people and wasn't going to bring Ed and wanted his friend from West out in California to join him. But back then, it wasn't conceivable that anyone would do one of those shows for more than 5 years. Jack Parr and Steve Allen, 4 or 5 years. For someone to do it even 10 years was just that. Was ridiculous to them, even Carson. So McMahon and wisely took Carson out to dinner and got on his hands and knees, tears streaming down his face, and begged Carson to take him. And it was the best move Ed McMahon made. 30 years of steady employment and leverage that gig to get Star Search, hundreds of endorsements.
And for anybody that, with my original partner, Don Geronimo, I was kind of labeled as a sidekick. And when you get that label, at least when I started back in the mid-80s, you always were Ed. It was always referred to as Ed because, of course, Ed was really mocked a lot with the ha, 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 laugh at everything. But he set the standard for how you move things along. And he was a tremendous asset. And he also had a pretty good sense of humor as well.
Yeah, he held back certain times not to overshadow Johnny. He was good. About 95% of the time, him and Carson were in sync. They needed each other. Yeah. They were very close back in the day. I mean, Johnny would talk on the air that he had a drink in. When he drank too much, you didn't want to be around him. And Ed got him home many, many times in the New York days. And they were in sync. Ed did overstep a few times, and Carson never let Ed forget it. But Ed was very, very, I mean, the job looked easy. People thought Ed didn't have talent, but it wasn't true. I mean, he was very good at what he did.
Let's talk about the drinking, because I don't know enough about it other than, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Johnny was, he pounded pretty good in the New York days. And then at some point mellowed out. Was it when he moved to the West Coast that he chilled out with that? Or when did it slow down?
It got a little bit better in the West, but in New York, even when he was like, I'm not going to drink, people would send over drinks constantly. People would sit down at Johnny's table. They felt they knew him. And he would say on The Tonight Show, I have one more drink than I should, and I turn into Attila the Hun. He would say, some people get fun-loving when they drink. Carson would say, I would go the opposite, want to fight the entire room. And it got him in trouble many times. And then when he got out to the West Coast in 1982, he got arrested for drinking and driving. And that's really when things got better. And he went on the air and said, you'll never see me do this again. And yeah, after that, he just had wine once in a while. But he was a mean drunk. I mean, Sinatra had to save his life once, literally saved his life.
Tell me about that. I've never heard that story.
So what happened with Sinatra is in 1971, first of all, Sinatra and him got together in St. Louis. They did a benefit with the Rat Pack, and that him and Johnny got to know each other. And Johnny was in awe of Sinatra. It was like constantly playing Sinatra in New York in his office, singing Sinatra in rehearsal. So in awe of Sinatra. 1971, Carson is at Gilly's, which is an establishment here in New York City. Way too much to drink. Crazy Joe Gallo, mobster, just got out of prison after 10 years. And Gallo was in the bathroom, and his girlfriend at the time was at the bar, and Carson did something very inappropriate. Gilly Rizzo was freaking out, the owner, and said to Ed McMahon, get Johnny the blank out of here, which he did. And then Gallo put a hit out on Johnny. And a couple things happened. One is that Sinatra intervened and sat down with Gallo and said, I need a favor. And Gallo said, you name it. And he said, I need you to leave Johnny Carson alone. And Gallo said, you tell Carson that he only lives and breathes because he knows Frank Sinatra. But then you had the top boss, the mob boss, who was Joe Colombo in New York. And to appease him, NBC had to air. And I watched this with my own eyes. In 1971, I watched the timeline matches up. They had to air a positive story on Joe Colombo from the mob. And it wasn't even on the NBC News. NBC News, they had a prime time, like 9 o'clock NBC magazine that they aired this favorable story on Columbo. And they did it. I watched it. There was no reason for NBC to do that. So those are the two things that got Carson off the hook.
Wow, I had no idea. I would imagine this is in the book, too.
Yeah. 1971 was very dramatic. That was also when Carson had all this competition. So in 1971, he has four TVs going on at 11:30 p.m. in his apartment in New York City. He's watching his own show. He's studying his own show. The Dick Cavett Show opposite him. He's watching that. David Frost has a TV show opposite. He's watching Frost all at 11:30. And then it was either Merv Griffin or Joey Bishop. And Cavett's 10 years younger than him. Frost is like 14 years younger. And Carson has this girlfriend who he later married who told him, stop dyeing your hair. So he has white hair. His mom, Ruth in Nebraska, says, Johnny, you look so old. So he has all this pressure. He thinks he looks too old. So what he did is he faked hepatitis in 1971, checked himself in the hospital, and got cosmetic eye surgery. Now, Carson didn't realize that if he claimed hepatitis, that everybody that was near him would have to get a shot. So over 200 shots were administered by the NBC nurse to Carson's staff, all the guests like Tony Randall that were in contact with him. Carson was horrified. It never occurred to him that everybody would have to get shots, but it was way too late. And then you had NBC vice presidents who weren't even near Carson that wanted to show their closeness to Carson. They didn't need the shot, but they wanted it, and they got it to brag to their friends. Yeah, Johnny Carson, I'm in pain because of Carson, but it was just bragging rights at that point.
Clear up some things about Johnny Carson for me, and true, not true. The fact that these feuds, the one that comes to mind is the Joan Rivers feud when she left and started her own thing. He never spoke to her again. Is that true that they never had any contact after she went off and tried to do her own thing?
They had contact that Rivers would see Johnny at a restaurant, but Johnny wouldn't talk to her. Miss Rivers admits this, but one of the main points that Carson just never forgave her is that she tried to take Johnny's prize producer, Peter LaSalle, offered him as much money as he wanted. Every talent coordinator that Johnny had was offered double their salary to go to Miss Rivers' show at Fox. They all, out of loyalty, said no.
That never comes to light. You never hear that. You never hear that.
Johnny didn't want to get into a he said, she said. He was the classy one. Somebody said shortly after, what do you think of Joan Rivers? He said, I wish her the best. I mean, obviously he was upset, but he didn't feel like he owed the public to get to air his dirty laundry. And Miss Rivers just repeated over and over again. I told Johnny he was the first call. Yeah, but he found out from Brandon Tartikoff. And Barry Diller told me, the head of Fox, he told me here in New York, he said, you owe it to Johnny to tell him in advance. All of Miss Rivers' friends said, Johnny's going to be furious. You need to tell him, and famously she didn't tell him, and he was devastated.
Yeah, because he really kind of put her on the map, as he did so many people. When it comes to the style that he had, I don't go back far enough to know the early days of The Tonight Show. Was he always great at interviewing? Did it evolve? It just seems to me he was so natural at it. And I said my favorite thing is that he let guests run.
It took a little time. I mean, he was doing it an hour and 45 minutes in the beginning, the first Tonight Show. And it was one of those things where people were used to Jack Parr, who was the biggest thing in TV, who was controversial, and he would have feuds, and Carson wasn't like that. So a lot of critics accused him of being bland in the beginning, but it just took a little bit. But I think he made a really good point in terms of him as an interviewer. He was curious, and so many times he would throw out the pre-interview where there's other late-night hosts that you can tell are just like they aren't even listening to the guest. They try to... Yeah, they tried to be funnier than the guest. Johnny was fine. Like, I'm going to let my guest shine. That was his number one rule. That was uniquely Johnny, which was, I'm going to make my guest look good. Whereas, yes, like somebody like you just mentioned, is like, I'm going to top my guest. Johnny didn't have to do that. He never did that.
We are talking with Mark Malkoff. The book is Love Johnny Carson, One Obsessive Fan's Journey to Find the Genius Behind the Legend. Rob, I've been monopolizing the conversation. My apologies, because I know you love this as much as I do.
Mark, it's such a pleasure. I've listened to every episode of the Carson podcast when you debuted it, and a big fan. Question about Johnny straying from the pre-interview. I think from what I've read, and I don't think a lot of people consider this, Johnny was exceptionally well-read and a very smart
That's
guy.
Right.
So did that help him to sort of, you know, stray off into uncharted territory when he's talking to someone? Because that, he just had an understanding of the way things were, right?
That's exactly, Rob. You're exactly right. He would read the books if the guest came in, and there were certain guests. Yeah, he would throw away the pre-interview. And he'd be working on the show from the moment he woke up, you know, and he... He read something like 10 newspapers a day. I mean, it was unbelievable. And he could have a conversation in any topic. And the curiosity really shined through that, he normally didn't have dinner after the show with guests, almost never. And it wasn't the A-list movie stars. It was always Carl Sagan, the astronomer, Jim Fowler, the zoologist. And he just wanted to ask more questions. I mean, he would ask them questions during commercials. And that really did show his curiosity. It wasn't enough for him to go to Russia with the president of NBC, Bob Wright, in the late 80s. He had to take 4 months of Russian classes, and he had somebody come to his Malibu home to teach him Russian, and he could actually speak a little bit to the Russians, and they loved it. And then when he went to Africa after the show retired, it wasn't enough to go to Africa on safari. He learned Swahili, and people over there were could not believe that an American took the time, and they were blown away. But that was Carson. Even when he hosted the Oscars, the only host in Oscars history, no teleprompter, no cue cards. He could edit in his head. He memorized all the jokes and would edit in his head accordingly to the response of the crowd. I mean, he was on a different level than anybody that has ever had that job.
Let's talk about the bad part, because there's been a lot written about Johnny personally, the cold, distant, loner, aloof, the marriages, the multi-marriages. Sure. I would assume you can have both be great on television and have a rough, very rough personal life, obviously, with the multiple marriages. Was he as standoffish and aloof off camera as certain things have been written?
The inner circle that I talked to that spent the most time with him told me something revolutionary, because he would make fun of the media that called him cold and aloof. The people that spent the most time with him consistently said that he was almost the same Johnny on and off camera, a little less talkative, but almost the same. But it was a small group of people. I mean, it was David Steinberg, Rickles, Peter LaSalle, and they demanded loyalty. Carson demanded loyalty from them, and it was a small group. But just for self-preservation reasons, and also to conserve his energy before the show, he definitely was not Johnny Carson all the time for everyone. I mean, he had to, for self-preservation reasons, shut down. I mean, the FBI routinely had to protect his life. Mark David Chapman, who killed John Lennon, had a short list of people to kill if it wasn't Lennon. Carson was on that short list. I mean, people constantly getting past NBC security with weapons. So, yeah, Carson, the cold and aloof thing came from Johnny just needing to be Johnny Carson. I mean, he couldn't, as Doc Severinsen said, he couldn't walk 5 feet on the street without somebody feeling they knew him and grabbing his arm and be, Johnny, come meet my wife. And he just, that's what he had to do to survive.
Let me ask you this. Was that due to just the overall reach of the show being the only game in town for so many years? Is that why the wing nuts would, arrive at NBC to do harm because of the volume of viewership that he had?
That is definitely it. And there's something with when people have mental illness, apparently, when people are talking into the camera, like newscasters sometimes get that in Carson. But Carson was, as Steve Martin said, maybe the most recognizable man in America after the president. I mean, people were going to bed with him at 11:30. They felt they knew him. And yeah, people were climbing over his fence in Bel Air. I mean, he was very animate that, I'm this Midwestern guy from Nebraska. I'm going to live as normal a life as I possibly can. Ed McMahon had the limousine. Carson thought that was ridiculous. The license plate said, "Here's Ed." And Johnny thought it was laughable. Johnny was bringing a sack lunch, brown paper bag, in the 70s, and he was driving himself. He did not want a bodyguard. He did have a nickel-plated gun that he carried for protection. He never had to use it.
Really?
I didn't know
this either. Yeah. This is awesome. Wow. I shot him right between the eyes.
Hi-oh.
That's a hi-oh. I like that. I just, I never would have thought that, you look at him and he's so easy on camera that all this would be going on, because he was the ultimate pro. I mean, really, there was no better pro in my opinion with that. Did he have did he like it when something would completely go in the other direction? As somebody who's done it, on my clown-like level of interviewing that I've done and doing shows, there is nothing I appreciate more than everything that I've prepared for goes out the window and something special happens. Was he the same way about that if the show went in a different direction? Did he like that lack of control sometimes?
It really depended on the situation. Like, if the audience was bad and a joke bombed, Carson could show his wit where a lot of late-night shows couldn't do that. He almost made it funnier when it bombed and could be self-deprecated. But if you got somebody like Don Rickles or somebody very almost, quote, dangerous on the show, like Burt Reynolds, it could go any way, and Carson would go with it, and there would be chaos on his show. Like, sometimes it did get uncomfortable. Like, George Peppard was drunk out of his mind, the Breakfast at Tiffany's A-Team, and he called singer Paul Williams a midget, and Paul Williams He got up ready to fight George Peppard. And I talked to Paul Williams about this. It was really, really bad. Carson lost control. He leaves the set, and Richard Harris, who wasn't even on the show, was drinking with Fred DeCordova, comes and sits at Carson's desk, and he starts interviewing his wife, Ann Turkle, who was on the show, and reading the pre-interview questions that Carson had asked her previously, and it was just pure chaos. And then it cuts to Carson, and he's with Fred DeCordova off to the side. That is an example of something that was probably Carson thought was good TV, but he had lost control, and that was definitely could happen on the show with battles with people. I mean, Chevy Chase and Gallagher got into it. Carson just was trying to be Switzerland and make peace. But
Chevy Chase and Gallagher, there's a fist fight I'd like to see.
Remember one particular incident, and I would love when he would do his pieces like off to the side, and they were demonstrating the hot toys of that year for Christmas. And I have to know, it ended up with them using some sort of kid's cannon to shoot a basketball player toy. And it was so backbreakingly funny because it was so just organic how it happened. Would they set up stuff like that, the toy bit? Like, would they make it a little difficult so we had more stuff to play with? Or was that really just him doing that bit and that's how it turned out?
I thought, and to my knowledge, it was just Johnny being Johnny. I mean, the writers would give him ad libs for certain for the toys. Sometimes he would use them, sometimes he wouldn't. He didn't need the ad libs, but they would give it to him. But that was uniquely Johnny. I mean, he would let the show go in a different directions, and he let all the mistakes stay in. Like, now the late night host will stop tape or they'll edit stuff out. But you have someone like John Davidson go on the show, or someone like Robert Goulet, and they forget the words to the song, and they're like, Johnny, can we stop? And he said, nope, we're gonna keep going. And there was a charm in that. I mean, the only times he would stop is Della Reese had a brain aneurysm and dropped to the floor, and if it's scary, they would stop. They had a comedian, I don't know if you remember him, George Miller. He was Dave Letterman's friend. He would, 1991, George Miller
tall,
goes on
skinny
the show.
Guy, right? Blonde hair, that type of guy. Yeah, I remember that guy.
1991, Johnny introduces him to do stand-up, comes out, has a panic attack on air, runs backstage after his second or third joke. Johnny said, you know what? We're going to stop tape. This could happen to anyone. We're going to bring him back on. It took him a few minutes. They brought him back on. And Johnny said, I want you to laugh as this never happened. And the people at home couldn't tell anything ever happened. And that was Johnny's being humane. I mean, he really took
that
care.
That was unbelievable kindness, especially in the heat of battle, I would think, with that. Was his esteem, you brought up Letterman, was his esteem for Letterman from your research, was that legit, that he really did, he was that fond of David Letterman?
He loved Dave because Dave showed him so much respect. They were Malibu neighbors. I mean, Johnny, point of pride in the mid-80s, Dave Letterman had this pickup truck that was rusty. The seats were all torn. He drove in 1973 from Indianapolis to California. And in the morning, Johnny and his head writer said, Dave's on tonight. Why don't we steal his truck? So they brought Dave early to the studio under false pretenses. And they had a tow truck driver. And Letterman, legit, this was a surprise. They took his truck, and during one of the commercials, they brought it on stage, and Johnny was talking about how ugly it was and showing photos, and Dave Letterman is so embarrassed. They opened the curtains, and Dave almost passed out. I mean, it was so damn funny. Letterman, Carson, on his final public appearance, May of 94, 2 years after retirement, did a walk-on on Dave Letterman's show in L.A., and that was so emotional, and the fact that he picked Dave for his last appearance speaks volumes.
When, you know, being the obsessive fan, having a podcast about Carson, writing this this book that I am just dying to get my hands on, I have to ask you this question. Is there anything in all of your research and all the podcasts that came out of left field that surprised you about Johnny Carson?
I think how sensitive the guy was. I mean, he didn't like to be corrected. Carl Sagan, even his friend, once corrected Johnny twice and interrupted him, and he banned Sagan from the show.
So he was a little thin-skinned then.
He definitely, he would say on the show, he's like, I do not believe any of my guests that say actors that or comedians that say the critics don't hurt me. He's like, if you have any sensitivity, it hurts. So yeah, like he banned Jerry Lewis and several other people for being rude to his staff. Like he was basically like, if you're gonna come into my home and be a guest, you're gonna be on your best behavior. So it didn't occur to me that things like that, like Lewis yelling at the cue card guy, would get him somebody banned from the show. But Johnny was a stickler for good manners, and I didn't know the sensitivity and the manners about him.
When you talk about him being thin-skinned,
yeah,
how much truth is there that when he decided he wanted to retire, it was because he was being made fun of on other shows? Did that really drive him towards retirement? Like they did Dana
Great
Carvey
question.
Did Carson on Saturday Night Live. They did Carcinio.
That's right.
And, I mean, he was on a ledge by himself for so long. And when he became a target, did that hurt his feelings?
It did. I mean, the Robert Smigel pen sketches with Dana Carvey, he hated those. He didn't want to become Bob Hope, where he thought Hope stuck around too long. And they portrayed him on those Saturday Night Live sketches as out of touch, getting a little senile. And Johnny said, you know what, if they're going to make fun of me, it's time to go. That and the show, NBC not consulting Johnny, moving the show from 11:30 to 11:35, which Johnny thought was a big disadvantage. And then Leno's manager, Helen Koshnick, planting a fake story in the New York Post in February of 91 that NBC wanted Johnny out. It was just a lot of these things. And Johnny saw that everybody was going to be getting in the late night game. And he just prided himself on entrances and exits and said, I don't need this anymore. But Carvey was banned from the show. In the beginning, the impression was not mean at all. And it just got to be meaner and meaner. And NBC, every Thursday when they would do a sketch, would say, you know, they're planning on doing a sketch this Saturday. We don't know if it's going to get past dress rehearsal. And Carson would say, you know what? We make fun of people on this show. I just don't find those sketches funny. They can do whatever they want. I just don't find them personally funny.
As far as Bob Hope, didn't like Bob Hope, right? He liked Bob Hope?
He loved Bob Hope's early work. He was fine with Hope in the 60s and 70s. It's just he thought Hope stuck around way too long. His performing skills went down and down. By the end, couldn't really hear and, was lip reading. And just Johnny would ask him a question. If it was out of order, Hope really had trouble keeping in touch. And Johnny just didn't understand with a guy with all this money, like on a Christmas, why would he wouldn't be with his family? He'd be out doing gigs. And just Carson looked down at the fact that Hope didn't have any friends really outside of show business or any interest outside of show business. He thought Jack Benny, Lucille Ball, and Hope all stuck around too long. And he said, I want to be remembered from the top of my game with my work. And, you know, he retired when he was 66, he left The Tonight Show. And the work, I mean, the fact that you, Mike, still are watching clips, I'm watching clips, over a million subscribers to the official Johnny Carson YouTube channel, 3 billion plus views on YouTube, and the fact that every late night host still talks about Carson, he hasn't been on the air in 33 years. That is an illustration of this man's ability and his work and his legacy.
Let's have fun right now with our executive producer, Mr. Josh Shiroka, down in your lower right-hand corner there. Josh, I will throw out a few names here,
and you simply say whether
you know them or not. All right, George, he was mentioned during this interview with Mark Malkoff. George Peppard.
No idea.
Richard Harris.
No idea.
Freddie DeCordova.
Don't know.
Let's see. Rob, do you want to try a couple as far as the names go?
Well, sure. Let's make it a little easier. Doc Severinsen?
Nope. That's why I stayed quiet and let you guys
Really? Run. You don't know Doc?
No.
Was there Jenny? Mark, I have to ask you this. Was there Jenny? I just had to do that. It's my fun. there seemed that one clip, the Thanksgiving interview, that's probably got more views than anything online.
You're right. They just start every year for the past 30 years.
I watch it all
years.
The time. Yeah. I've been down that road a little bit, so I like watching. Genuine esteem with those. Johnny loved, and my idol, yours is Johnny Carson. My idol was Buddy Rich. I know Buddy Rich was a bit of a prick. But they loved each other, right? They were buddies.
Best friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before the taping in '87 when Buddy Rich died, Carson, two people were telling me that he was sobbing in his office. I mean, he wanted to cancel the show, but the audience had been loaded in. And I've watched the tape many times, and you can see Johnny's eyes are all red during the monologues. He had been sobbing. He doesn't mention Buddy Rich's name because he knows he's going to break down. And he did did a Reagan sketch, and the audio didn't work, and that he just lost it in front of the audience. It was the one time or two times in 30 years he absolutely lost in front of the audience because the Buddy Rich was in his mind. And he got through the show, and then he canceled like 2 weeks worth of shows. And he didn't like going to funerals, but he went to Buddy Rich's. It might have been his last funeral, only because he didn't want to be the focus. Like, he wouldn't go to a funeral if he was the only famous person, because everyone would be looking at him, and Carson thought it's about the deceased. But this was a funeral that Jerry Lewis, Mel Torme, all these famous people were, so he wasn't taking focus away from Buddy. But even when Buddy was in the hospital in Philadelphia, Carson told Ed, we're taking a car, we're going to go surprise Buddy. And Carson had his Karnak turban, and Ed had the envelopes, and they did a filthy, dirty Karnak to cheer up Buddy Rich in the 70s, and Buddy absolutely loved that. There was love there for sure.
That's you know, it's interesting because talking to you, if anything, has in many ways confirmed a lot of the one word that I always think about when I think about his personality, and that's complicated. He was a complicated guy. Yeah, he had absolutely. There were a lot of different people, and you know, it's a pressure cooker. It's a meat grinder. It's difficult. And when you're riding, you know, at the top of the heap for that long, I would imagine, you know, the thin skin part, it's self-preservation, I would imagine, to a certain degree with Johnny Carson, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was just trying to get through the show. And I mean, people would come on the show, like someone like David Brenner had tried doing it. And he said, nobody knows how hard this is. And Johnny said, it's murder. And Brenner said, nobody should try this. Chevy Chase guest hosted the show one time in 1986, had a very hard time. Sits down with Johnny a month later and said, I had no idea how hard this was. Nobody's going to be the next Johnny Carson. And of course, Chevy, I guess, forgot about that because a few years later, tried it on his own and lasted 26 episodes on Fox before they pulled the plug.
Stunningly Stunningly bad when
Carson
Chevy Chase tried.
Made it look easy. You would have people, Carson would sit at home and watch these guest hosts trying to guest host a show. Arnold Palmer, Joe Namath, Kirk Douglas, Lorne Green, the most people you would never think about that would try to guest host his show.
Lorne Green, I never knew that. That's amazing. Yes.
Mike, you know that when the one time that John and Paul from the Beatles were on, they were hosted by Joe Garagiola.
McCartney and Lennon were so upset because they didn't know who Garagiola was and they wanted it to be Johnny Carson. They show up to NBC in New York. They're plugging Apple Corps, and they find out Johnny's not going to be there, and they're upset. And it's Garagiola had no appreciation because Johnny wanted to be there, but he had to do a concert in Maryland. And Garagiola is just so bad at this. And like Tallulah Bankhead, who died 6 months later, was either drunk or on meds, and it was a freaking train wreck.
You know, the greatest thing with the archives is that they're all still out there for you to see. And really, this has been fascinating. I'd love to get, we could do 2, 3, 4 of these, but I wouldn't want to steal your podcast because I could talk about Johnny Carson for an hour a day.
Speaking of his podcast, can I ask one question that fascinated me?
Sure,
There are 8 billion podcasts out there, and if you can find a hook, that's what makes it work. How many episodes of the Carson podcast did you do?
We did nearly 400, and we've been releasing new ones, and it was one of those things. The only reason we stopped, because the audience wanted more, is that a lot of my guests, unfortunately, that I wanted started dying out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Ask about that. They're still available, I know, if you want to download
them. They are.
Them. But your angle of going with people, at least this was really centered in the first couple hundred episodes. You'd interview people that were on the show and then talk about their experience. So not so much about Johnny, but seeing Johnny through their eyes. And I thought
that
was the greatest hook. And it was really, for someone, you know, who grew up, I was fascinated by it. Did you see any commonality in the experiences for all? Because you interviewed big stars. You interviewed what he would call civilians.
Sure. That's right.
What was the common thread between these guests' experiences?
Two things. One, that Johnny, when people went out there and they were terrified, that Johnny would calm them instantly. And he had this aura and this... thing about him. Like, Elizabeth Taylor avoided the show for 29 years, goes out in February of 92, and instantly is like, this is not scary at all. Johnny had this thing about him. You know, the civilians, people that had never been on an airplane, some of them, or let alone be in a studio in front of millions of people, and he just could make them feel comfortable. Second thing is the comedians. The comedians, the young comedians, most of them would tell me that Johnny, either during the commercials or after the show, would give them suggestions on their material and do punch-ups. Someone like George Lopez said when he debuted afterwards, Carson came to him and said, you know what, maybe try this here. And Lopez tried it the next night and said it, Carson was right on the money, and he got like the biggest laugh. I think Carson's generosity with the young comics, that was pretty consistent. I liked hearing that.
I have to applaud you because of, as you said, with the people passing away, you have preserved so many long-term interviews with these people otherwise would not exist. And I think that's really important in the showbiz canon. So good on you
I have two last questions for you. Okay. When you mentioned the young comedians, who, in your opinion, had the best set on The Tonight Show? I have my opinion. I want to see if it matches with you.
I would maybe do a tie with Stephen Wright and Drew Carey. Freddie Prinze did awfully well. Gabe Kaplan did very well and got a sitcom out of it eventually, talking about the Sweat Hogs and his experience. There were a couple. I mean, Roseanne did very well. Louis Anderson did great.
Louis Anderson was my number one seed.
I got together with him and we talked, and him telling me, I mean, it was an uphill battle. They told him originally, the booker, the gatekeeper, said that he would never do the show and Carson wouldn't like him. And he finally gets on, and Carson just loved Louis. I mean, Louis told me his life changed instantly. And he said he couldn't go a day walking around outside where people said, you know what, Louis, I saw your first Tonight Show and how special that was. I think Louis Anderson is right up there. That's a good assessment.
And usually anybody that writes a book, last question here is, what do you want people to get out of this book, Love Johnny Carson, One Obsessive Fan's Journey to Find the Genius Behind the Legend? What do you want people to get out of the book?
A few things. I just want people, but maybe younger people too, to realize that this guy was maybe the most powerful person in TV for 30 years, dominated American culture, the impact he had on entertainment, fashion, politics. If people want to go into entertainment or study communications, I really urge them to go on YouTube and look at some of the clips that we talk about on air. I mean, he saved political careers. Bill Clinton in 88 bombed at the DNC, went double over his allotted time, was booed off speaking, goes on Carson, plays the saxophone long before Arsenio is an unknown. His political career saved by Johnny Carson. Just the power that this man yielded. And also the second thing is, I really did feel a responsibility, and I didn't have room in the book to do all of them, but just the kindness that this guy had behind the scenes, that he was saving people's lives and what he was doing for people. He did not want to be acknowledged. And I thought those were important stories because the media really went with Joan Rivers, that this guy's an awful man, and would just repeat this in interviews, and the media just went with it. And I just really wanted to, and people's own words showed that he was definitely a complicated man. He wasn't a saint by his own admission, but that there was a lot more to the story, and I wanted that to be said.
I cannot wait to read it. Mark, really, what a delight talking about Johnny.
Thank you. This was fun.
Love to have you back on and talk
Carson. Oh, I'd like that a lot.
Sometime,
I'd like
you know?
That a lot.
Really, thank you. That's Mark Malkoff. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
The book is Love Johnny Carson, One Obsessive Fan's Journey to Find the Genius Behind the Legend. What a great booking. That was so much fun.
Mike, you gotta
love that.
Skim the list of episodes of the Carson podcast. Find a celebrity you like and listen to it. It'll blow your mind. It is so cool to see it from the other direction. And
that's very,
Mark's
very
a great
cool.
interviewer. Yeah.
Josh, how did you enjoy that?
I like it. It makes me want to go and check out the Johnny Carson YouTube channel.
It really is fun.
All I do is see clips of comedians and stuff. I don't see a whole lot of his just hosting an interaction.
Mm-hmm. It's just Burt Reynolds probably with the chaos, you know, if you really want to see the spontaneity. And Rob, I talked to you about it one time with Rodney. The thing he loved, Carson loved most about Rodney Dangerfield is when Rodney would run out of material because he would have a stand-up set and then he would have his prepared comedy for the guest chair and he would run out. And at one point he's on with James Mason and he gets to the end of of his material. He doesn't have any more material. And he looks over at James Macy. He says, so what's new with you? And Carson almost has his own aneurysm there, which was
so
fun.
So great.
That's great. All right. Well, that what a delight. I love that. So much fun. What a wonderful way.
Attaboy Mark Malkoff. Good guy.
It almost made me forget that I have a cold today because, of course, it's Christmas and you always get a cold at Christmas time. It's traditional. This is the time of year when I need my wardrobe to be its best. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs. Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Plus, down jackets, wool top coats, and leather styles that are built to last. It's everything you actually want to wear, built to hold up season after season. I got a cashmere sweater perfect for the Florida winters, which is to say it looks amazing without being bulky or too hot. It looks amazing, and I love it. Get your wardrobe on point and your gift list handled with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/TMOS for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/TMOS. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/TMOS. This holiday season, what does comfort look like to you? For me, it's slowing down, finding calm amid the chaos, and making home a place where everyone can truly relax. That's where Avocado Green Mattress comes in. Avocado helps you create your own natural oasis, a calm, cozy space filled with certified organic comfort. Their handcrafted mattresses are designed for deeper, more restorative sleep, and their breathable pillows and soft organic bedding bring that same luxury to every part of your home. Hosting family this year, Avocado's sustainable furniture, like their beautifully made city bed frame, helps you create a warm, inviting space where everyone sleeps well and feels cared for. Everything Avocado makes is thoughtfully crafted with the planet in mind, certified organic, non-toxic, and built to last, so you can feel good about the comfort you bring into your home, because Avocado believes in being better for you and better for the planet. Prioritize rest and recharge with Avocado's organic comfort. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis and save big during their holiday sale. Avocado, dream of better. The Mike O'Mara Show is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial genius, monetary magician. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. You see, my friends, Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Hey, everybody, I want to tell you, when the holiday season rolls around, it feels like there's a party every weekend. All of those boozy, creamy, sugary, hangover-inducing drinks, they add up. This season, may I suggest Soul's out-of-office gummies. Same fun vibe, low in calories, zero hangover. Soul specializes in delicious hemp-derived THC and CBD products designed to boost your mood and help you unwind. Or try their out-of-office beverage, a refreshing alcohol-free alternative that's great for winding down on the couch or just socializing at a tedious office party. Yeah, find the couch at the office party and just sit there.
We've been to a few of them, Mike. We've been to a few tedious ones.
Soul also has a variety of products specifically designed to help you get a better night's sleep, including their big seller, the Sleepy Gummies. All of Soul's products are made from organically farmed USA-grown hemp and are vegan, gluten-free, low in sugar, and federally legal. The reindeer aren't the only ones that'll be flying this holiday. Bring on the holiday cheer and treat yourself or someone you love to Soul. This season, right now, Soul is offering the TMOS audience 30% off your entire order. Go to GetSoul.com and use the code TMOS. That's GetSoul.com, promo code TMOS, for 30% off, everybody.
Now, what this is, Josh, this is a new thing. This is Christmas tidbits. And as we get closer to the holiday,
what are you talking about?
These will be items that you can talk about with your friends at the water cooler or perhaps at the gym.
Well, this is Christmas, so it'd be around the dinner table with your family.
I can be with that, sure.
I got all Rob's Christmas tapes, so I'm very happy about that.
Incidentally, I know how you feel about all this Christmas business. I never get what I really want.
What is it you want?
Real estate.
There it is. That's Lucy. Let's start, ladies and gentlemen, because that's what we do on the news. We start as I get back to the
Here comes the first tidbit.
This is the first tidbit. I'm obsessive compulsive just like you are, Rob. I can't help myself.
I know. You know, Mike, it's what drives the business,
it
really.
It is very, very disgusting. People are obsessed with checking out nudes online.
Yeah.
But not what you might think. Christmas tree nudes.
Huh?
There's a naked Christmas tree trend going viral on social media. That's basically what it sounds like. A tree without any ornaments, decorations, tinsel, and sometimes without even lights.
So like everything I can see outside.
Yeah, it's a house plant.
A common look is a bare Christmas tree, sparsely lit with soft white lights.
The holiday season.
And he'll be coming down the chimney down. Lyric in all Christmas music. He'll be coming down the chimney down. Does not make sense in anything. He'll be coming. Do you agree with me on that? We talked about it for years.
It's horrible. Let's go
he'll
back to the
He'll be coming
tape.
Down the chimney the down.
That's Andy Williams.
God.
Oh, hey, Dickory Dock.
Suck.
Don't forget to hang up your sock.
Worst just Christmas exactly special.
Here it comes.
He'll be coming down the chimney down.
What?
Andrew Williams, Mike.
So it's a modern minimalist thing, which has been picked up by various
I hate
influencers.
I hate this idea. It's horrible.
It's just lazy people.
Julianne Moore, Michelle Pfeiffer, Victoria Beckham, and a Kardashian. Of course, it's always a
For
Kardashian,
one thing,
you know?
The problem here is minimal lights. You need to put as many lights on your tree as your tree can support. That's where the beauty is. And then you will put on the ornaments, and that's nice. But if you're minimally lighting a tree, that's just like a houseplant at a doctor's office. It's good.
Don't you pull out the ornaments for, like, sentimental reasons?
Of course, yes.
That's the whole point of the ornaments, is that every year there's new ornaments.
Yeah, you have to hide the pickle,
you know,
Mike.
The interesting thing about doing this show is I never know what's really going to get you too upset. That's amazing. moving right along, the internet became a bigger cesspool of misinformation than ever this year. So this pick for Merriam-Webster's Word of the Year makes sense. The Word of the Year from Webster's Dictionary for 2025 is slop, as like, in AI slop.
Oh, okay, not like the classic definition of slop, which is like, you know, goo.
They define it as digital content of low quality that is produced, usually in quantity, by means of artificial intelligence.
So it's nice that we finally got the show mentioned in the dictionary.
AI content got so cheap and easy this year, it's unavoidable now, from cookie-cutter writing full of botched facts to that fun video your dad sent of an old lady on a sled crashing into a fence. AI slop is everywhere. They say they picked it because it managed to sum up the problem in just four letters, and it gave us a fun way to mock AI. Here's a quote. The word sends a little message to AI. When it comes to replacing human creativity, sometimes you don't seem too super intelligent. Other words that made their short list include gerrymander, touch grass. That one I had no idea.
Touch
grass.
Go out and touch grass.
Touch grass.
Oh, I thought it was about Jaden Williams.
Performative, tariff, and dictionary.com's word of the year. Do you remember that one? We had one on the show. 6-7. Very good, Josh.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
He's got a good memory. You know that?
Not for Richard Harris.
But he's got a good memory. His short term is really, really good, and it kind of counters your long term. I've got like two memory people here on the show.
Together, we make an entire brain.
That's very cool.
It was a year, and I was thinking you brought up AI. It was a year ago that I thought this was really cool, and now I'm almost ashamed to play it. Is that Bing Crosby greeting that I play at the front of the show? Mm-hmm. It's horrible, and I was so impressed with it just 12 months ago.
Well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, it's terrible,
Rob. And Josh, may your holiday be filled with all the peace, love, and warmth of the season. And
he says baby.
Just baby.
And baby.
Yeah.
A little snow on Christmas morning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Things need to get better than that.
Yeah, shut up, Bing. Anyway, the night before Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were found stabbed to death in their home, Rob and his son Nick, the prime suspect, got into a very loud public argument. It happened Saturday night at Conan O'Brien's Christmas party. Sources say that after the argument, which a lot of people heard, Rob and Michelle left the party. People say Nick's overall vibe at the party was pretty creepy. I've seen, like many of you, many of the photos. And by the way, a nice $20 super chat from L. Gowan. Thank you very much. We love Johnny too, buying the book for a gift. Great idea.
I think she's corrected. I think it's Gowan.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Family sources told TMZ that Michelle had been telling friends over the last few months that she and Rob were at their wits' end over Nick's mental illness and drug abuse issues because they'd, quote, tried everything. Now, he wrote a book. They made a movie about addiction where I guess they thought it was the end of the chapter, but he still had his demons. They found him Sunday night about 15 miles away at a metro station near USC. He's being held without bail on suicide watch. TMZ says Nick checked into a hotel around 4 a.m. Sunday morning. When staff came to the room later that day, they found blood on the bed and in the shower, and he had the sheets covering the window. On a related note, one of the British tabloids got video of Billy Crystal and his wife outside the Reiners' home after the news of the deaths broke. Billy looks pretty distraught. Rob directed Billy in When Harry Met Sally.
Good friends, those two.
TMZ says Billy and his wife actually saw the bodies because Romy called them right after she called
my
police.
God.
And Larry David was also reported spotted nearby looking emotional. And, of course, I was going to open the show, and I'm glad we had a lighthearted Carson interview because the Trump comment on social media was
insane. First reading it, I mean, it broke extraordinarily wide yesterday, but when you first read that comment from Trump, did you think maybe it was AI or a parody or a joke? Really?
Not with that
guy. It was so over the top, I thought it had to be. And it was horrifyingly sad to find out it was
genuine.
Well,
I mean, the thing about where we are and where we are as a civil society now, and I blame my generation. I think that I was raised by parents who were so aware of decorum and civility and high road and doing those type of things. And then I think that when you've got people, he's on the older boomer side, Trump, but there is there's an acceptance of bad behavior that comes from the fact that we were so reined in as far as that. And I think that's why it's just another and one of the many reasons why the children of the greatest generation, myself included, suck ass.
Except we've seen over the years that Trump knows better. He just completely was misappropriate.
Also, I think Trump plays the game of wearing us down. I mean, if he does something despicable for every event, which he seems to do, it takes attention away from each individual event. And it's just,
I can't get inside his mind, but I sometimes think because there were so many people on the left when Charlie Kirk was murdered.
Yeah.
Do you think he says, now that justifies me saying something about Carl Reiner? Do you think that's what goes through his mind?
Rob Reiner.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of people excuse his behavior because of that, where really it should have been, here's your chance to show the better way to handle things.
Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, really just with all the things that have been said over the years, I looked at that and, it was one of those SMH moments. It really pissed me off. Sharon Osbourne credits her kids for keeping her alive. She previously made headlines for revealing in a 2007 memoir that she and Ozzy had an assisted suicide pact should either of them get dementia. Sharon didn't follow through with that pact because of her kids. She said if it weren't for them, she'd have gone with Ozzy because she's done everything she's wanted to do in this life. I don't believe it.
I think she tricked Ozzy.
Oh, stop it. Now stop that. She added, quote, years ago when I had one of my mental breakdowns, I went into a little facility to help with my head. There were two girls over there. They didn't know each other, but they were in there. Each of their mothers had committed suicide. I saw the state of these two young women, what they were in and what they had to do with their lives, what it did to their lives. And I thought, I will never, ever do that to my kids. When you love somebody, and I really do believe that Sharon loved Ozzy.
I really do believe that.
You could tell by the reaction. And as someone who fortunately was raised by parents who really, really loved each other, my mom, right away when my dad passed, it was just like, towards the end of her life, I just want to go see your dad. That was that. Some people, they give it all to their hubby, and especially when they're a caretaker.
Yeah.
I think that that happens with that. So that's sad. I get full of Sharon Osbourne too. I really do, but I get that that comment.
My parents divorced, and they occasionally call each other, which is nice.
Did you feel that you needed to plug that in there for your own whatever it is? Is that why you did that?
I don't know, Mike. I've had a week already.
All right. Today is National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. Yeah.
You know what? I'm a fat guy, and I love all things fattening, but that sounds disgusting.
Excuse me.
Oh.
There is a map of every state's favorite chocolate covered whatever. And unfortunately, insects did rise to the top spot in one state. Overall, let me see, the most popular thing to cover in chocolate, what do you think that is?
Peanuts.
Nope. Josh?
Strawberries.
No.
Raisins.
Think savory.
Chocolate-covered roast beef.
Close.
What?
Bacon.
Oh, that's
no.
People think bacon belongs everywhere.
This is big bacon.
Big bacon, exactly.
Effing bacon.
Yeah. Mike, do you have the most? Go ahead,
peanuts should have been the right answer.
Yeah. Do you have the number one answer for what they cover in chocolate in Nevada? Because if you don't know, it's hookers. You can go there.
That's big fun, man. That's a Christmas celebration,
right?
It really is.
Anyway,
Middle America said bacon. Specifically, bacon is the top choice in Alabama, Colorado, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa. Hey, hi, Steve Bridges. Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Wisconsin.
I like to cover my bacon with chocolate, Captain Steve.
Bananas, chocolate covered bananas.
That's good.
That's not bad.
That is most popular.
Money in the banana stand, Mike.
Arizona, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota. Nevada, Oregon, and Virginia. Almonds, chocolate covered almonds.
That's not even the right nut. No.
Number one in Maryland. Sorry, Josh. New Mexico, New York, Texas, Utah, and Washington. While people prefer pecans in Arkansas, Louisiana, and South Carolina.
What about just a peanut? Is it because of the allergies?
Peanuts. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Peanuts are loved in South Dakota, and macadamia nuts in Hawaii, chocolate-covered macadamia.
Yeah, okay, that's strong. But that's also too exotic, I think, to be a real common runner. If you had to choose, Mike, between chocolate-covered peanuts,
things you get wound up about.
Goobers, right? Okay, or chocolate-covered raisins, a la Raisinettes.
Right.
Which do you prefer?
Chocolate-covered strawberries are the most popular in Alaska, Mississippi, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Wyoming, while cherries win in Maine, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, and West Virginia. I don't know if I got all the states there.
Is strong. But, Mike,
raisins?
In your book, Raisinettes or Goobers or anything related
Raisinettes.
To this?
Not even close.
I agree. And especially Kirkland.
Goobers. You like Goobers? You like the chocolate covered peanuts?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Peanuts. Enjoy them a second time. Finally today, a lot of the stuff that we eat more of around the holidays can leave you feeling backed up. I can relate to that. There's not a lot of fiber in Christmas cookies, and the booze in that eggnog can leave you dehydrated. With
every night,
help.
Mike, during December, we allowed a huge cheese plate in my house.
Bind that colon to dust. luckily, science just figured out the top foods to add in your diet that can lead to less straining at stool. Researchers at King's College in London found these three foods are the best ones to eat if you're backed up during the holidays. The first one is a classic, but you might not guess the other two. Number one, prunes.
Of course. They call them now, dried plums.
They're high in fiber and also have something called sorbitol. It's used in certain types of over-the-counter laxatives. 8 to 10 prunes per day can get things moving again. Or you can be like me. You can just go down to the store and buy a big box of Miralax.
Sure. Absolutely.
Go with the chocolate-covered prunes.
Or the chocolate-covered Miralax. number two is kiwi. They've got a specific enzyme that breaks down proteins and helps
with
digestion.
I don't buy it.
You think it's maybe big kiwi?
Big kiwi, absolutely.
Two or three kiwis a day for 1 month can help keep you regular. And number three, nobody will get it. Nobody will get it. I will give you one guess each.
All right.
I will give you you do?
Yeah, Sol gummies, 15 milligrams.
Wrong. Josh. Oh.
I have no idea.
Rye bread.
Really?
See, I knew I'd stop the room with that. It's the best option when it comes to bread. Studies have found it can even work better than some laxatives. Rye bread.
Yeah.
I hate rye bread, by the way. I don't like
rye.
Not even on a
good deli sandwich?
No, I really don't like rye. Coffee.
That'll do it.
Two big cups for me every morning. Another option that gets things moving because it stimulates the muscles in your colon. By the way, gave my son a little sip of coffee today as we were waiting for his bus just down the road. And I said, Dad, this is hot. You know, sometimes high honor. Sometimes high honors. I'm like, where does he get that,
Mike?
Really, where does that come from?
A good tip for when you're bound up is a mushu pork from a Chinese restaurant because it's all cabbage. And
mushu, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Delicious.
Maybe Michael's setting up to sue McDonald's.
Sue him.
Hot coffee.
Sue Daddy for the hot coffee.
Right on.
That's right. I'll have a prune sandwich on rye with some kiwi slices and a nice cup of Joe. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas, everybody. Hi there, everybody. Hello. I love, love, love this music. You know, hi, everybody. I'm Mike O'Mara. The holidays sneak up fast.
They do.
But it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods has thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high in fiber. High quality.
Yes.
They have something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers to history buffs to diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They have donated more than $3 million to date. That's just so nice. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful. Thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off that list of yours. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/TMOS. That's uncommongoods.com/TMOS. 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Sorry. Let me start that again. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. See, when I try to be relaxed, I actually get less relaxed. I need a psychiatrist.
You need a prune.
Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. We have a super chat from Chris Arnold, 2809, for the purchase of chocolate-covered Old Bay seasoning. Yes, yum, yum,
and
yum.
Also, Mike, we neglected Racer PGT, who also did a $10 super chat.
Thank you, Racer PGT. We appreciate it. Rob, do you want to talk about your flight? Because you did fly in.
Yes.
It's nice to have you back where you belong.
I love it.
And even though that's a song lyric, welcome back to Virginia.
Love it.
All Rob did yesterday is text me and Josh, and it was a sign that says, thank you for your patience. Shuttle will be here shortly. And I mean, no text message could be better.
I took it as I landed.
That's it. That's exactly the reason I sent it. But I knew that that would be much more entertaining than saying I landed. Mm-hmm. So as I was going through John Foster Dulles International Airport, which, by the way, is beautiful.
Oh, so modern.
You know, I actually had a pretty easy getaway, and Mike, we discussed it briefly yesterday. Fort Lauderdale Airport is a smaller, much more manageable airport than Miami.
It is indeed.
So I enjoyed flying out of there. Security was a little slow, but you know, it is Christmas, so I was okay with it. I had one bag to check, and I did that for the small fee of $40 is all it cost me to fly with a bag, because, you know, a lot of people, that's a luxury to take luggage.
Yes, luggage.
And when you land at an airport, and you know, you don't ever take the time to put your phone into airplane mode anymore, no need. But when you get close to landing.
Hold on.
You don't put your phone in airplane mode?
Of course not.
No, you're still supposed to do that.
Okay, well, I've never been on a plane that crashed because I didn't do it, so.
Well, selfishly, if you want to make it selfish, it will destroy your battery. It drains it really fast.
Oh,
because it's
okay.
Constantly looking for.
Oh, now he'll do it, selfish bastard.
Well, Mike, if you've ever not done it, if you've ever been a scofflaw like me, go ahead, Josh.
They still tell you to.
Yeah,
they begin on every flight.
But I'm not listening.
Yeah, you made it sound like the rule has been eradicated.
Gone. In my brain, it has.
Yeah. But, like, remember back when we had to turn our phones off?
So when you land, Mike, and you have your phone not in airline mode because you're the worst person in the world.
You're horrible.
When you land, you get your phone finds the signal, and you get like 30 texts and 8 emails, and your phone's in your pocket going, vroom, vroom, vroom,
sure.
Vroom. So I land at Dulles, and I get a text from United Airlines, and I say, oh, how nice. And I read it, and it says, welcome to Washington. We wanted to let you know your bag will be arriving on a later flight.
Oh, man.
To save time and skip the baggage services line, use this link to set up complimentary bag delivery online.
Oh, man.
Thank you for your patience. And the first thought, and this is why big airline has got us so beat up. I'm there thinking, I said, wow, I don't even have to wait in luggage. They're going to deliver my bag to me. That's good. And then I have to stop and think, and say, hey, you know what? They didn't bring my bag with me. They had my bag an hour and 20 minutes before the plane took off.
And you paid them that $40.
$40.
It dropped it off at UPS.
Exactly.
Delivered.
So I'm going through this while we're waiting because there is literally one of those luggage movers blocking our plane
right
from getting to the gate. So we got time there on the tarmac. And I go to that link to say you've lost my bag. And it is a...
What a drag. God.
It was not great. And... Mm-hmm. You have to answer every question they send you, or you can't complete the form. So you start with your super flyer, I'm a United guy, number, and your name, and your address. And then it says, what kind of bag was it? I said, firm-sided rolling bag. And they said, okay.
What color?
Yeah. And they don't have my color on the list. Now, I purposely, the last time Carrie
and I... By the way, Josh, that's Paisley.
No, Mike.
Purple Paisley. He got it when he interviewed Patty Labelle.
Pink and purple was on there.
They offered patterns as one of the choices. When we bought luggage, we bought orange luggage because you can spot it a mile away on the carousel.
Yeah,
it's great.
That's why I bought yellow.
Yeah, well, the list doesn't...
You two are so similar in certain ways. Yeah,
also,
I know it does, but it's just...
a bright color car. I can find it in the parking lot.
It's just funny that you two do these kind of quirky, weird little things together. It's wonderful.
Orange is not an option on the list. And I keep scrolling looking for, like, none of the above or something, and there's nothing. It's just colors.
Why don't you just go with red?
I clicked yellow, and then it says, do you have any other additional comments about your luggage? I said, yes, it's actually orange.
One person wrote, bright orange houndstooth.
Exactly. And then it also says, if we were to open your bag, what's the first thing you'd see? And I started thinking
cocaine.
About all the things that I don't have this morning. I said, like, oh, my medicine, my Yeti microphone, my handheld microphone, all the chargers that I have for all of my electronics. They're all right there on the very top. And I'm an idiot because I've always been of the opinion that if it's something you can't live without, like your medicine, you do it as a carry-on because then you know you've got it.
Right.
I got lazy. I threw my medicine in my suitcase. And now if they don't get it to me by dinner time tonight, I'll likely die. So that's where we're at.
What is the most important medicine you have?
It's arsenic, but I take it in a small amount. It's the only thing keeping me alive.
Kill yourself.
I would say probably it's a tie, Mike. It's a tie between blood pressure and mood elevators.
Wow.
Now,
that's wonderful.
You should have just wrote on that sheet, a brand new MacBook is the first thing you'll see.
Oh,
so that when they deliver and it's missing,
where is it?
Buy him one.
Yeah, I guess you do.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But, and they
boy, would I like that. Hey, there's a place near my wife's new store called Paymore. Have you ever heard of that store? Paymore?
I go to Payless.
It's the lobster rolls, right?
No, the lobster rolls are next door. Paymore, they give you apparently top dollar for old electronics. And I, you know, because my computer is not getting any younger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had this for a while.
I bet the top dollar is in quotation marks. Yeah.
No, it's pay more.
Well, yeah,
top dollar. Top dollar is a slot machine.
Do they spell it M-O-R?
More than anyone else in the neighborhood.
What if Carla started buying laptops?
Right.
Then she had double business. Then.
That's very, very, very exciting.
But they said they were going to get right back to me with a confirmation email.
So you still don't have your luggage.
Not even an email from them.
Those bastards.
I hate it. It is so uncool. And again, I would be a little more flexible if they didn't charge you $40.
You have a bumpy flight because it was kind of windy in Florida yesterday.
It was a little bumpy up front. Yeah, we had to keep our belts on, which is good.
I bet you can get that $40 refunded.
Well, I think I'm going to ask for a little more than that. Yeah. Once I get the bag, then I'll begin.
Use your Jay Leno voice and say, hey, how about a little something extra in your envelope? Yes, sir.
Mike, if we could conference call, I could say, I'd like you to speak to my attorney, Jay Leno.
Hello there. Listen, this is unacceptable. He needs a brand new laptop. Yeah, that's what he needs, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, I want to give some movie tips for our listeners in a second here. But first, I want to tell you about a great gift for Christmas time. Time's running out. The big day is almost here. This is really seriously getting down to the wire if you want to get something and get it there on time. Skip the panic and give an Aura frame.
Yes.
It is without a doubt the coolest digital picture frame that's out there. People love it because it can be all about them.
Mm-hmm.
The frame allows for unlimited free photos and video. Just download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. Plus, you can preload photos before it ships and keep adding from anywhere, anytime. You can even add a message before it arrives. You can share photos and videos effortlessly, straight from your phone, all year long. Even better, every frame comes packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag. Remember, you can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it! For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver matte frames, named number one by Wirecutter. By using promo code TMOS at checkout, that's AuraFrame.com, promo code TMOS. This deal is exclusively for our listeners, and frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. And now here's the drunk
here's
guy
the
from
guy.
The attorney.
It's getting late. It's getting late. You better hurry and finish your Christmas shopping. Only 9 days left.
That of all
you walked it. You walked over it. I had it. I nailed it.
I know. I blew it. There are 26
bells jingled.
It's because it's. You know what it is? Because it's his. That's he claims ownership over it. That's why.
That's a lie.
That's
I tried to get
lie.
It. That's a lie.
That's
I tried to get
lie.
It right. I would like to play it again, though, if I may, because there are 26 different shopping tapes. And this
is a lie.
Legendarily, 9 days left, Mike, is the one they probably should have asked for a second take from the drunk guy.
Okay.
Just focus on the drunk guy on this one, and I think you'll agree, he barely makes it.
9 days left for Christmas shopping, 9 days left to fill the stocking.
A lot.
9 days left for Christmas shopping, only got 9 days more.
Only got.
Hi there, it's getting late, it's getting late. You better hurry and finish your Christmas shopping. Only 9 days left.
I used to love him, and now I hate him.
All right, movie time. I got a good one and a not-so-good one.
All right.
And as a matter of fact, the not-so-good one is pretty ridiculous. There are two movies out there. There's a movie right now that's online called Dead of Winter with Emma Thompson.
Okay.
And it is ludicrously bad. It is
that good.
By the way, Emma Thompson is a fabulous actress.
Yes.
One of the best working actresses today. But the premise of this, suffice to say, kidnapping, the wilds of Minnesota, ice fishing. It just
Emma
it's
Thompson
all over the
in
place.
Minnesota. That's
Emma
a good
Thompson
fit.
In Minnesota. Maybe that was a bad. I think she produced it too.
Was this a payday for her? Do you think, or did she just get suckered into
you
it?
Know
What's
what?
The deal?
I think that perhaps you know they talk about it all the time that actresses late in their careers get less and less opportunity for good work, and
that's right.
Sometimes you go out there and grab something you want. I think maybe the premise was there. It's just too much implausibility. That's what it. Too much suspending of disbelief.
You couldn't suspend that much. No.
Could not do it. And like the topic, you know. I like you know the Great White North.
Sure.
I like snow. No, yuck, yuck. Here's one that is really cool. It's called Anniversary. I don't think Carla liked it as much as I liked it. But it stars Diane Lane.
Mm.
And if you like, what's that movie with all the nuns in the red suits? You know. The one where they
Conclave?
Have Aunt Lydia, you know, the TV show.
What was the name of that show? I do remember the show because it had your cousin in it.
Yeah, and
Peggy from Mad Men.
The Handmaid's Tale.
Right. Yeah.
It's got that vibe to it where an authoritarian, totalitarian society comes on, and it really shows you. You know, one of the things I said to Carla about this movie called Anniversary. It's also got the actor from Bloodline and Friday Night Lights. That guy who's a good actor. I wish I had his name. I'm sorry about that. This, you know, I think when we look at where we are now with, you know, the interpretation of reality, mm-hmm. I think it could easily, you know, happen. And it's scary. But this is really what happens when power comes down and people become nuts.
Why do you think Carla disliked it?
I think she probably didn't she's not burdened with the concern for this being reality that
I see God bless you, Mike. When we
maybe because I had a code.
When Carrie and I have an anniversary, she tends to not enjoy it either, so I thought mm-hmm. there was maybe a
no in fact Anniversary is I believe it's an anniversary party that takes place within the movie, but it's the son of this couple takes up with this lady who's written a book called The Change. And The Change
it's
is
about
how,
menopause.
And The Change is how society should change.
I understand.
And it advocates a lot of controversial things. And then it becomes very cultish. And then the cult gets out of control and gets larger and larger and larger. And then you see people with a new kind of American flag on their lawn. And these people, she writes, I think, for the New York Times. And the mother is, you know, very on the other side of things. And the son drifts apart from her. And then the son is intimidating everybody because
and
he's a high-ranking
they
official.
The Capitol?
I was going to say this is a pretty wacky fantasy, Mike.
It's very interesting. It's very. I think in these times, it's a movie for these times, mm-hmm. and I think you should you know give it a whack and see what you think. But not Emma Thompson. And I don't know. I don't know. Emma Thompson might have been good in that role. I think, and Diane Lane, who is what near 60 now, I would mm-hmm. think. Diane, I'm not sure exactly.
I think probably past 60.
Do you think she's past 60?
I do.
She just takes care
exactly
to look
60.
Exactly 60 and looking amazing.
I remember when you lived on Diane Lane.
Diane Lane was fantastic. Well, right after we moved from Penny.
Penny Lane.
on that note, let's move on. Do you have any beautiful video for us today?
I do, Mike, and some
you're
of it
back
is...
in your, you're back in the confines of your studio, yeah. So I expect nothing but... true gems from you today.
Mike, it's some of it's holiday flavored. It's all wonderful. And I'd like to apologize to Josh because I know how much he loves pulling and playing the video for me. But now that I'm at home, I get to do it. So,
I'm
Josh,
glad.
Sorry
glad
about
you
that.
Get to do your job.
Do Thank you have, you. So you have Christmas stuff?
Some stuff. Yes, that's Christmas.
Fragile.
That's wonderful.
It must be Italian.
See,
it
I'm using Italian. The stuff you sent me. You all have heard about the incredible weight loss people have experienced with peptides. With these medications, people have lost incredible amounts of weight. This is the same copy. Haven't you two gotten together recently to come up with something new, for God's sake?
There's a little bit changed at the end.
All right, change the beginning.
All right.
Anyway, everybody knows I've lost a lot of weight. You can lose weight, too. Here's a great part. You can do it from the comfort of your own home just by going to DermGlowSkin.com. You just click the weight loss button, choose your peptide, take a quiz, and a doctor will get you that prescription you need. It's delivered to your front door. At DermGlow, they know that these amazing products are not cheap. That's why they have three great payment plans. They accept HSA, FSA. Don't miss out on huge discounts on select medications. You're going to love this. And by the way, did you know that you can also share this with people? And
yes.
You can sell it just like my wife does. It's wonderful. You can get that information through the end of the year. Now is the time to stop the food noise and feel like yourself again with DermGlowSkin.com. Give yourself a present. You only live one life. You deserve to make it the best. I feel great since I went to DermGlow Skin and got these peptides. You owe it to yourself to visit DermGlowSkin.com. And we thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Take it away,
I like that.
Rob.
Some beautiful video.
Cherry time.
Oh, good Christmas jingle.
More for your money.
Josh,
bye,
I found...
Bye.
I found for you your... best neighbor you could possibly have. I know you're happy in your home, right?
Yeah, but I don't like my neighbors.
Of course not.
So
this is the neighbor you need, and he's close by. He's in Sarasota.
I love Sarasota.
With a very nervous-looking reporter. Let's look at it.
37,000 lights greet visitors at this ranch in Nokomis, and this all started with one man's love of Christmas and wanting to share it with the entire community.
Michael Lemick has spent the last 3 weeks preparing his five-acre property.
Is that him?
He's turned it into an old Christmas time feeling, with twinkling lights, a roaring fire, and hot chocolate with all the fixings. Michael says he got his love for the holidays from his mom, who went all out to make Christmas extra
He's
special.
He's got the land, why not?
He says last year, neighbors asked to come over to see his lights, and this year, he wanted to open it up to everyone.
It's enjoyable to me to do. I like to share it with the community. Love
like
when
to
the
show
kids
my,
come over and say
I'd like to see that tattoo.
Like to show my tits.
I like when the neighbors came over to ask if they could look at his lights, and he answered the door in loose-fitting boxers.
Yeah, come on over. Yeah, I got these here for you.
Mike, are you a good tipper when you do Jordan?
I'm sorry, what?
The lights went out.
There you go. Get off my property.
Are you a good tipper when you get DoorDash?
I don't get DoorDash.
I don't either, but if you were to do that, would you tip well?
I tipped yesterday. A guy was in the backyard, and I didn't know that the community actually would cut these privacy shrubs that I have, and
yes.
I was so happy about it. I went outside, and I laid a little tip on him.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Remember back in the 70s when all the magazines had privacy shrubs?
Privacy shrubs. Those were cool.
They were.
I like that.
You
I'm Bush.
DoorDash well because it tells the person the tip ahead of time.
And that's the problem here. Check out the situation that happened when this guy was captured on a Ring cam because he found out that his tip was only like $2.
Tonight in Vandenberg County, where an investigation is underway.
This guy.
One man's strange.
Absolutely, this guy. And also, who is the brilliant news director that says, you know what? Put a Christmas tree on the set.
Yeah, it's a bad set.
It's really not okay.
Well, it's one of those naked trees.
It is a naked tree.
Just a little bit of lights.
Naked. Is underway into one man's strange DoorDash experience, which is all caught on camera. Our Emma Beck spoke with him today.
Little boy collar.
Now with this developing story. Emma?
Well, Rob, Mark Cardin is seeking charges after his doorbell camera caught a DoorDash.
All right, hold it. Pause it for just a second. Are they getting reporters and anchors now from middle school? What am I missing? What the hell am I missing?
This is a fun story, but I could really just watch any story with local anchors throwing to local reporters because it looks like they're on their way to a Sadie Hawkins dance.
Local anchor, the young Sharon Bailey, has this story filed. All right, let's go
to the DoorDash.
Delivery driver, as they seem to pepper spray his order. He says watching the video, he couldn't believe what he was seeing.
It was just past midnight on December 7th when Mark Cardin and his wife decided to order DoorDash. It didn't take them long to realize something was wrong with their food.
I noticed my wife started eating and she started choking and gasping. And after
hey, Josh,
a I know.
Choking and gasping.
Choking and gasping because there's pepper spraying going on.
If I'd been on that porch, we would have started a fighting.
Yeah, that's true. But I wanted to just start eating.
and especially she wanted to start eating.
She really did. She was happy that guy was delivering. Christmas store, Mike. Don't you love a Christmas store?
I love a good Christmas store.
It's the best is because there's lots of little things that can break all the time.
Yes, wonderful.
I got in trouble as a little kid because my mom took me to a Christmas store and I broke an incense burner and they forced her to buy it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But I wasn't as clumsy as the deer that got into the Christmas store and got wedged into a chair.
Uh-oh.
Now, the reason I love this tape is twofold. The noise of the deer's paws or hooves, I guess is what they say in Goodfellas, the hooves on the floor of the Christmas store.
It's paw. It's a hoof. Come on, Ma, it's a sin.
And then also the sound of the wailing deer when they're trying to get him out. This is pretty
hard. I have not heard this tape. Okay. I have not seen this tape.
Right.
Let me see if I can duplicate it. I always like to play this game to see if I'm accurate. Yeah. Is it going to be something like
it's much harder than that.
Okay.
You got close at the end. Let's look at the remember the deer somehow got stuck in a chair. Oh, listen to him walking. There's just ornaments everywhere. Here he comes.
Where is it?
It's coming.
Jeez, poor thing. Oh, poor little thing.
Yeah, I feel really bad for him.
Rudolph. When does it get stuck in the chair?
You'll see at the end when he starts complaining. You have to give it a moment.
I just want to hear that sound.
Okay, I think he's stuck in the chair now.
Does the cop have an earring? I don't know how we're doing. No, he's got a thing around his sunglasses.
Sunglasses.
All right, I'm waiting.
Here comes.
You better grab its hind legs.
What did the guy say?
Better grab its hind legs and drag him out.
No, not really. Not quite. You're right, Rob.
Like a child.
Oh, yeah, that sounded like it.
You were close. Want me to take this chair off?
It's close at the end, right? That's mine.
Yeah, carry it outside like that, then loosen it.
Wow.
Wow. You know, I'm not a black-hearted person, but yeah, I was going to say he was delicious.
Yep.
And let's close with this, Mike. I think your favorite scene in the movie Miracle on 34th Street is when they find the cane at the end. Spoiler alert for a 90-year-old movie. Okay, this...
Because I'm a complete mental wreck.
I know. My favorite scene is when he sings to the little Dutch girl. Because the girl thinks that he's Santa Claus, and Santa Claus can speak all languages.
I have my own theory about that.
Well, there's a lot of history behind that scene. But let's move on to this.
It reminds you of the Third
Reich.
Stop
it! No!
That's why you do it.
She's
Kinterklassen, Deutschland.
Stop it.
You're ruining something
beautiful here.
Second time I've called you bastard on the show. I'm sorry. I don't mean to ruin it.
Doesn't matter.
Go ahead. Let's watch.
And by the way, technically right. Universal, they have the Grinch for Christmas that meets all the people. And this is a pair of kids that are actually dressed in Grinch swag. They wanted to see the Grinch so bad. But they only spoke Spanish, and look how the Grinch handles it.
Look at you!
You look fantastic. You were waiting all your life for this, weren't you? I'm glad you're here. Oh, no hablas inglés. Yo de menso hablando inglés. ¿Por qué no me hablas en español? ¿Cómo te llamas?
Lia.
Bueno, mucho gusto. ¿Cómo te llamas? Nathan. All right. ¿De dónde vienes? Guadalajara, México. Pues bienvenido. ¿Me trajeron comida? ¿Tacos? No, nada. ¿Tamales? ¿Horchata? ¿Dulces? ¿Cebollas? Nada. No me trajeron nada.
I don't say the word much, Mike, but that's kind of magical right there.
That's
like
magical,
that.
And that reminds me of pitching practice last night. Anyway, let me minimize that. Oh, God, that freaks my ass out. Hold on, I'm doing this to my own 65-inch monitor. Wow.
Yeah, our heads are a little bigger now, no?
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. I'm Bill O'Reilly and Ed Turney's love child. Thank you very much.
New camera looks great.
Yeah, sure. It does. I better get myself the beauty treatment. Boy, oh boy. Carl, I'll be in your chair in an hour. Thank you. Get me a peel.
Does anybody have a disc sander?
We got to get out of here. We'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow for Rob Spiewak and Josh Scirocco. This is Mike O'Mara saying so long, everybody.
Frankly, I've never looked better.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara bonus show. Get it at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Oh, darling. How silly of me. Hello. Why, we loved having Santa Claus come and stay with us. I think it would be simply charming.
It's a clinker! That blasted, stupid furnace, that gummit!
Bye-bye.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.